Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, August 12, 2016. With me today, Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Hey, man.
Hey, hey. And Dave Hamilton, how are you?
Doing swell. Wrapping
Excellent.
Up the week. Yeah.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. I'm glad both of you are here. And I think today's show will just be a fun way to wrap up the weekend and jump into a fun weekend. So as long as we're doing that, we might as well just jump into something that's incredibly fun. Or maybe it's the other thing. I'm not sure. Microsoft gave us a perfect example of why it's so important not to have backdoors into our operating systems by accidentally letting the master keys, the golden keys, so to speak, for their encryption out into the wild. Brian, you wrote about this, so fill us in, please.
Well, what Microsoft did apparently earlier in the year was to accidentally release a key that allows a backdoor, basically, that allows someone to install whatever they want, even on a device that has what is called secure boot. Dave, can you actually explain to us what secure boot is?
This is your story. I've been looking at other stuff all week, so no.
Well, you used to be a Windows expert too, you know.
Yeah, but never in the secure boot days. I left it behind long before that.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, so secure boot is a thing where it's supposed to be protected, and you're not supposed to be able to put anything else onto it. That's the like really, really high level version of it. And yet these keys allowed you to do just the opposite. And Microsoft released them into the wild by accident, of course. It certainly wasn't deliberate, unless, of course, A, they were punking everybody, and B, they were actually trying to make a point.
Man, they're sure taking it on the chin, making that point, if that's their, goal.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case, especially when Bill Gates has gone on record as saying that basically companies like Microsoft and Apple should do what it takes to give the government what it needs in the pursuit of law enforcement. So, yeah, I don't think this was a deliberate stunt or anything, but it does serve as, like, you know, an expert example of why backdoors existing are a bad idea. Not only does the existence of a backdoor make a target for our government, foreign governments, authoritarian regimes, criminal organizations, terrorist organizations, just, you know, curious hackers. Not only does the existence become an automatic target, but sometimes even the legitimate holders of a key can mishandle it.
Yeah, so this wasn't necessarily, as I'm looking at this, this wasn't necessarily a backdoor, though, right? I mean, this was sort of a necessary byproduct of the way secure boot would have to be implemented, right? I mean, this wasn't some special thing Microsoft had. This was the key that needs to be there, right? I mean, secure boot, if I'm understanding it right, is a way to make sure that way so that the PC knows that it's only booting with stuff or the operating system is only booting with stuff that's trusted by the PC manufacturer. Right. And in order to do that, the key would then need to be shared everywhere. Right. I mean, it would. Well, I guess it's the public part of that key would need to be shared everywhere, which is the point of PKI. But there's one private key, right, to decrypt everything, because it's Windows that's decrypting it, not you, right, as the user, where you would generate your own key. So that private key would have to exist, no? I mean, was this truly a backdoor? I mean, what the example stands nonetheless, but I guess what I'm asking is, was this something that Microsoft didn't have to create, but they did just in case? And I don't think the answer is yes. I think it's that they had to create it in order for secure boot to actually work.
That could certainly be possible. I'm going to defer to you on matters such as this in the first place.
Well, so Microsoft's TechNet says when the PC starts, the firmware checks the signature of each piece of boot software, including firmware drivers and the operating system. If the signatures are good, the PC boots and the firmware gives control to the operating system. So if Microsoft is participating in that, they have to create this signature.
Yeah.
Right. And they have to sign it. And so, right, the signature can be put out there in the public, and then you can confirm that against their public key, and everything is good. But the private key has to exist somewhere, just like when if I sign a message to you, I have to have the private key. And if my private key leaks, then anyone can decrypt anything that is sent to me and can also sign things as me, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this is less about we created a back door and more about you got to protect your keys. But I mean, the point is still valid. If there is one, and this is where it really is important. If there is one key for all of the things, that is your weak point, right? Whereas something like iMessage, and we're talking about two totally different, you know, use cases of security, but something like iMessage, Apple doesn't hold the private key, right? The private key is something you generate. You don't necessarily realize that you're generating it. Your device generates it for you, and it stays on device and never, ever leaves. So that way, Apple can't divulge it because they don't have it. They never did.
So this is actually serving as two examples, and it obliquely demonstrates the danger of a backdoor.
Keys
can be mishandled, right? And it directly shows the wisdom of having end-to-end user encryption for services wherever possible.
Yes. Absolutely. That's right. Yeah. But again, this kind of thing, as I'm looking at it, I don't know that there would be any way to implement this without there being this particular hole. And I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it. You know, you folks can count the number of seconds that I've spent on this, but there's no way jumping to me, obviously. I'll need to go for a walk or take a shower or something and go into the flotation tank, right?
Then I can
turn my mind off and let this stuff sort of percolate. So,
well, the really cool thing too is that from what I was reading yesterday, there is almost no chance that Microsoft will be able to revoke this key. So, you know.
Yeah, well, they can't because there's all these devices out there that are dependent on it. Yeah.
So with that key out in the wild now, their private key, and no reasonable way of revoking that key and putting a new one in place, anyone that really wants to take advantage of this to install their own software for good or nefarious purposes, they can do that much more easily now, right?
Yeah.
And there actually is a good side, sort of a good side to that for some people. They can, they can stick whatever they want on their own, Surface tablets, for instance. Right. So they can stick Linux.
Right.
So, I mean, for a subset of people that want to dink around with what's on their devices that are protected by secure boot, they have a little more freedom.
Yeah.
Silver linings.
So there is that.
Yeah. Yay.
Exactly. Right. Well, we're talking about the vast majority of the people out there. This doesn't matter to, never will matter to, and they don't care about it because they won't try to do something with the key, and nor will they be targeted by someone who is trying to do something nefarious with it, right? There's a small subset of people that are going to, like you said, be interested in using this for their own benefit on their own machines in a non-nefarious way. And then there are a small subset of people that want to use this in a nefarious way and will target as many people as they can, but it's not going to be everyone.
Yeah.
But you don't know if it's you. I mean, that's the risk here is, Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not that reassuring, Dave.
No, I know. But it's whatevs, you can't do anything about it. So, you know,
well, you
good
could,
to go.
You could go with an Apple Mac product.
Yeah, you could get a Mac. Wait, I would do that. Yeah, get like an iPad or maybe a MacBook or something.
Yeah.
That'd be a good idea.
Yeah, it would be a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of liking this idea.
Yeah, that's the advice right there.
All right. Well, I can live with this advice. It's working for me already. Yeah. Hey, there's another thing that I wanted to talk about today before we wrap up. And this stemmed from me writing a short little piece yesterday. I think it was yesterday, telling people about Netflix's Fast app. And they launched their Fast website a few months ago. And what it is, it's just a very simple internet speed test tool. And it's a one-trick pony. It tells you how fast your download speed is. That's it. So
yeah, it doesn't look at upload speed, doesn't look at quality of your connection. It's all about the speed that you can suck data into your network, which for streaming video like Netflix, where they can get some extra stuff and cache it, so you're not worried about like timing, then that's what matters to you when it comes to that.
Yeah. Right. Yes, exactly. So what they've done now is released an app version for the iPhone and iPad so that you don't actually have to go to the website. You just have this little app that does the speed test for you. So that's cool. But I started getting questions from people saying, why am I seeing different speeds on the same device, on the same connection, at the same time, when I use different speed test services? So I thought we should kind of explore that just a little bit. And Dave, you know a lot about the networky side of and server side of things.
I do.
So, do you want to offer your take on this?
Sure. So let's assume for the moment that nothing about your home network is going to impact the tests that you're going to do. And that's, of course, completely false. But why, if nothing about your home network has changed, all else is equal, why would one speed test give you a different result than another? And the simple answer is all a speed test is at its core is a server somewhere out there on the internet that you are connecting to, and it's going to, in the case of this Netflix Fast one, it's going to barf a piece of data at you as fast as it possibly can, and then you test how quickly that data came into you. The assumption when that happens is that you're testing your speeds. However, as fast as sending you data as fast as they possibly can, or the server sending you data as fast as it possibly can, tests everything in between the device you're reading the result on and the device that's sending it to you. It might be that your downstream connection is the slowest, the weakest link in the chain, right? The slowest part of the connection. But it's possible that something in between you and them is slower. And it could be the very server that's trying to send you data. If it's overloaded, well, then it's not going to be able to send as fast. And maybe the server doesn't need to, right? I mean, I haven't done this Netflix fast test in a little while. But I will while we're doing this here. And yeah, it's reading in at 29 megabits per second. Well, that's great. But I know, because I was doing a speed test earlier today because I was testing one of my routers, that my downstream here maxes out at about 150 megabits per second when I download from speedtest.net, which is another speed test app that I can do. Why are they different? Well, my guess is that Netflix's server isn't testing any faster than they would ever need to send you data. So why, you know, maybe, and we haven't talked to Netflix about this, but they're certainly not, they're not soaking up my connection.
Yeah. Now, when I did my tests with the app and with their website, I was getting about 120 megabits down.
Okay.
And which was in line-ish with the other speed tests that I was doing at the same time, knowing full well that I had far too many variables in the mix, But, you know, they were all in the same ballpark. So, you know, that was good enough.
Yeah.
So my guess is that in this case, there's something else that's making your 150 megabit connection look more like 30.
Yeah. No, that's I'm sure that's right. And maybe my iPhone, between the time that I did the test on speedtest.net an hour and a half ago and right now, maybe it jumped from my 5 gigahertz network, which has lots of bandwidth, to a 2.4 gigahertz network, which might have less, and that's now limiting it. But it's not obvious to me. The speedtest app doesn't divulge that, although it could. And so, you know, you don't know. And that's why I said earlier, assuming nothing on your network has changed to impact it. And of course, maybe I just proved that that's why I said that that's entirely false.
All right. So when you're conducting a speed test, it's not like this is an absolute result that you get, because you have the variables on your own network, which you can eliminate if you really want to.
Yeah.
But then once the test gets outside of your own network, you're bouncing through different servers along a path between you and the server that wants to barf that data packet to you.
That's right.
And so if you have different services or speed test services that are using different servers, then the likelihood you will see the same speed from all of these different tests is pretty low, because there are so many variables in between.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's going on. I checked, and my phone, in fact, did jump to a slower network, and doing the speedtest.net test results in exactly the same thing that I'm seeing from Netflix. Yeah. So, but it could be, it could have also been maybe another device on my network was, I mean, who knows, maybe one of my kids is doing the exact same speed test because this app is out and they want to test it. And if we're both doing it at the same time, then at best we get half. That's it. So.
Okay. So then if someone wants to have a better idea of what their actual download speeds are, what would your advice be?
Ooh, good question.
Very good question. So, first of all, if you truly just want to test your connection as opposed to any given device in your house, right? I mean, it might be valuable to you to know how fast your phone is able to receive data versus your computer. But the first thing that you want to test is the speed of your actual connection. So eliminating as many variables as possible. So that usually means get Wi-Fi out of the mix, mm-hmm. right? Because that is, you know, the biggest the easiest thing to change, in fact, by doing nothing. I literally haven't moved from this spot since I did that last test, or my phone hasn't. I got up, but my phone has stayed right here, and yet it jumped to a different network. Why? You know, let's not even get into that. So I would do an Ethernet-based test. I would plug into your router that is directly connected via Ethernet to your modem or whatever it is you get your internet from. Mm-hmm. And then I would also make sure that no one else or no other device in your house is doing a significant amount of network activity. In theory, what you should do is disconnect everything and only have one device pulling, and then you can really see what your speed is. That's not entirely practical for most of us, and it's really not necessary, just as long as you're sure that someone isn't, for example, watching Netflix or downloading a large file or, you know, serving everything to every BitTorrent user in the world. Mm-hmm. So once you get that stuff off, then Ethernet into your router. And I would go to, I have two speed test sites that I like. One of them is speedtest.net. They've got tons of bandwidth. I have yet to see them max out, other than perhaps when I was in California on, I can't remember, Google just bought them, but it was web something. It was that super fast fiber connection I had in my Airbnb there. And it maxed out at about 500 megabits per second down and upstream, which was pretty cool. But speed test, yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, basically should have just told me more than you need, sir, and that's all I needed to know. But speedtest.net. And then I also really, and that will test both directions, both downstream and upstream. And if you're on IPv6, it actually does two sets of tests. It does downstream and upstream over IPv4, and then again over IPv6, which can be very interesting because you might learn some things about your router at that point. The other speed test that I really like is DSL Reports has a speed test, which I believe is speedtest.dslreports.com. The reason I like that one is because in addition to testing your downstream and upstream speed, it also tests the quality of your connection when it's under load. A term for the result of which is buffer bloat. The idea is if you are using 100% of your available bandwidth in either direction, your cable modem has to limit that somehow. And the way it limits it is essentially by throwing away packets or forcing them to go to the end of the line. Because of that, you can have a great connection or great speed, but as soon as someone is either uploading or downloading in a way that soaks up the connection, everybody else is going to experience very, very high latency. It'll feel like it's taking longer for web pages to respond or email to check, even though that's relatively low bandwidth stuff. Those packets just have to get in line. And DSL report speed test will test that. Really, what it's testing is not the quality of the connection you're buying, but the quality of the router that you have between you and that connection. And if it's not doing any quality of service, and Apple's routers are horrible at this, then you will get a very, very bad buffer bloat score, even though you might get a very, very good speed score. And it's an important piece of data to know. Because if you are downloading a Netflix movie and it's soaking up your entire downstream, you don't want someone who's just quickly checking their email on their phone to be negatively impacted. So you want a good router in place that'll deal with that, too.
Yeah. In terms of the ideal speed test, it kind of reminds me of asking, what's the sound of one hand clapping? Who cares? Because it ain't happening.
What?
It was a lot of work to have to go through that you just laid out to get an ideal speed test.
I explained them. It's actually it's pretty easy to do the ideal speed test. I mean, DSL reports is it.
No, the conditions you want to set up in your home.
Yeah, well, as long as you're plugged in Ethernet, run DSL report speed test. I mean, that's the short answer.
There we go.
That you're looking for. Yeah.
All right. Well, okay, I feel much better now that we all know so much more about speed tests and why there are variations between the results you're going to get. Yeah. So, Dave, thank you for all that information.
My pleasure. Fun stuff.
Yeah, and we're out of time, so we need to wrap up. Dave, thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Yep.
And listeners, thank you for being here, and thanks for asking about speed tests. Otherwise, we wouldn't have filled you in on all the details today. So everyone have an awesome weekend. We'll see you again on Monday.